Psalm 14 is a fairly well-known psalm. It starts with those words, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God." Well, I want to look at this psalm today and just see what we can learn from it. I've called it Intelligent Fools. That's my title for this talk. Because the fool here is not the person whose mental ability is below par. He's not a clown or a person of low intelligence. He is a person who is intelligent but acts as if God does not exist. He is the practical atheist. He is the sort of person that you see right through our society. Most of the people in our society are not theoretical atheists. If you ran a survey, do you believe in God, you will find the majority of the people will say yes. Now, they may have a vague idea what this God is like, but yes, they would say they believe in God. But to all practical purposes, they are atheists. They are not theological atheists, but practically they are atheists. They live as if God does not exist. They are not debating the existence of God. If you debated the existence of God, they would be on the side of saying, yes, there is a God. But they refuse to acknowledge this God. They refuse to have anything to do with him. They live as if he doesn't exist. And they use their intelligence to rationalize their own wrong conduct. That's why I call them intelligent fools. These are the people that the psalm is talking about, I believe. And that is often the meaning of the word in Old Testament times, fool. Not as we sometimes might think, but a person of intelligence who uses it the wrong way. Now, I just have singled out of this psalm 6 results, and I'm going to go through them briefly in these 10 or 15 minutes available to me. The first thing about these people, these intelligent fools, the result is they corrupt society. It says in verse 1, they are corrupt, they do abominable deeds, and there is none that does good. Now, they may be successful, they may be respectable, they may be well behaved in social terms, but they have distorted values. Inwardly, they are corrupt. And these distorted values mean that everything they touch, everything they do, their opinions are wrong. The way they're shaping society is wrong. The values that they have are wrong. Whether it's in the media, whether it's in business, whether it's in education. Because they are starting from a point that says, God doesn't matter. Well, they don't even say that, because God does not even enter their thoughts. That's the point. To all practical purposes, they are atheists, because God does not enter their thoughts. And so no matter which area of society that I've just mentioned they happen to be in, the outcome is always going to be corruption. It's going to be abomination. And I don't mean corruption necessarily in the sense of politicians lining their pockets with the money that should have gone to other causes. It's corruption in the moral sense. It's in every sense. We finish up with a society that has distorted values because people don't acknowledge God. So that's the first point. The second one, coming to verse 2, the Almighty, he looks down from heaven upon the children of men. I like that expression, because in the previous verse, these people have thought they're great. And that's the arrogance of human beings. We think we're great. We can do this without God, and we can organize society without God. We can run the whole show without reference to God. God looks down and he sees them as children. He calls them here the children of men. He looks down on them as if they're children, to see if there are any among them who act wisely, who do seek after God. And of course, there are very, very few. So that's the second result of this lack of God in people's thinking. They neglect worship. There is no sense of the transcendence of God, of somebody who is great and above and beyond the material world, of somebody who is over us and to whom we owe our worship and our obedience and our lives. No sense of that at all. Their whole world is one that can be measured, that can be seen, and that they understand in terms of the material and physical and social aspects of their being and their existence. And so the second result of this lack of acknowledging God is a neglect of worship. Childishness, in other words. The third point in verse 3, rebellion. They don't seek the thing that they most need. We have a whole industry, I suppose is the word for it today, of counselling. You go to counsellors for this and counsellors for that. It's become a racket, really. And people are seeking advice. No, they're not. They're seeking approval, more likely. Maybe they are seeking advice, but they want the advice to satisfy them. And, of course, they often get the advice that they've been wanting. But when you leave God out, you'll find that in the end, the advice has been harmful because it has shut God out of the consideration. And so people are led off in the wrong direction. They've all gone astray. And they're all alike now, corrupt. No, they don't do good. Not one. They don't seek the thing that they most need. They seek only the things that they want themselves. And in the end, they become spiritually corrupt. So that's the third point. The fourth point in verse 4, ruined relationships. No knowledge of God. All the evildoers who eat up my people as they eat bread. They exploit each other. Love your neighbour as yourself doesn't apply. They love themselves first, second and third. Jesus said, love God first, love your neighbour second. That's all he said. You look after yourself in the normal course of things, but the two great commandments were love God first and love your neighbour as yourself. But these people are not too much interested in God. They're certainly not interested in their neighbours. They just do what they want to do. In fact, their neighbour here gets trampled on. They eat up my people. You see, when there are no absolutes, when there is no God, there is no ultimate right or wrong, people are free to do as they wish. And then they are free to exploit the vulnerable. If you live by faith in God, you'll be out of step with the majority of people. You'll be fair game for those who are unscrupulous. Because the weight of social values is against those who are going to study and pursue God's values. And we have to learn afresh what it is to live by faith. And unfortunately, many of us in the Christian world in our country have forgotten how to live by faith because we have been tarnished by the society around us. We have become immune to its sufferings and sorrows. We are guaranteed protection and insurance by the government or by some organization that we paid money to, so that whether we're sick, out of work, or no matter what happens, somehow we are covered with insurance. Or underneath us there is a safety net that the government has provided. And so faith has gone out the window. And many Christians live as if there's no God. That's a terrible thing. And so even Christians can fit into the category that's being talked about here. Living as if there is no God. Sometimes if you took God out of the way, I mean hypothetically or whatever you like to say, if somehow God disappeared, it wouldn't make very much difference to the way many Christians live. They live for themselves instead of living in the way of faith. And when that happens, very soon, we find that we too are devouring other people because self has taken over and other people are exploited. So relationships are ruined. That's the fourth point I've got here. The fifth one in verse 5, disastrous consequences. It is going to be disastrous in the long run. We're so short-sighted, we're so selfish, we pursue this road and we think that this is going to take us to satisfaction. But we'll find at the end it comes to disaster. She'll be in great terror. For God is with the generation of the righteous. He's not with the generation of those who look after themselves. God sometimes may be silent. We may not see him intervene in catastrophic judgment. But he's still active. Whether we see it or not, he is in control of everything. And let us never think that somehow we are going to get away with it. That we're going to deceive him, that we're going to pursue what we want to do, and somehow he hasn't taken any notice or hasn't intervened in some catastrophic way. God is still working. He still takes notice. And in the end, there will be great terror upon those who forsake the way of righteousness because God is with the generation of the righteous. And so that's the fifth consequence, these disastrous consequences. And the sixth point I've got here, when God is put out of people's vision and they live as if there is no God, self becomes their only goal. The righteous suffer, the selfish get what they like. These people confound the plans of the poor, but the Lord is his refuge. And so those who are ripped off and trampled on, they have no other refuge, only God. But those who have put God out of it, they pursue their own selfish ends, and other people suffer. So these people that I've called intelligent fools actually do a lot of damage. They do damage to themselves, they do damage to other people who are vulnerable, they do damage right across the society. In view of this, what then ought to be the prayer of the righteous? Well, that's reflected in the final verse. We must act as if God is interested, as if God does exist, as if he does care, he does notice, he does see. Oh, that deliverance for Israel would come out of Zion when the Lord restores the fortunes of his people. Jacob shall rejoice, Israel shall be glad. That's the prayer that the oppressed offer in the context of a society where others have forgotten God, have written God off, and have produced as a consequence all these evils that we've looked at as we've moved through this chapter. When the person has his eyes focused on God, then his anxiety will be replaced with gladness. His faith will be rewarded. His patience will be rewarded. For the Lord is with those who truly follow him.